These reports get checked now!
BP 100 over 40 and dropping!
Repair anticoagulant. I need 15 cc's antitoxin.
Lock him down!
His pulse is spiking. He's going into arrest!
Rep the tape.
We got him.
Set for another just in case.
He's still falling. Give him the neurospat.
But Schechter, we...
Do it! Rock. Can you hear me, Rock?
Yes.
He's responding.
His vitals are still faint.
Easy there, Rock. Is the pain bad?
Dark.
Rock, calm down. The poison's all through your system, but there's still a chance. Keep doing everything we have. Antitoxins, decoagulants, even a new drug we've been experimenting with up in the lab. Now it's up to you. You have to fight the poison yourself.
He's understanding. Quickly, 125 cc of light-specific IV, a 50-50 solution.
Here, Elston.
Chest prep?
Swab down.
Rock, Dr. Elston's going to inject the needle. You're going to feel a sharp pain in your heart. Concentrate on that, okay? Do it.
Rock. Going to guide the red light laser at your heart, at the coagulated blood that's forming there. You must help us. Send your blood cells there to break it down. Think of the obstruction crumbling, melting into nothing.
Prep the machine.
Microscopy charging. It'll be about 10 seconds, Dr. Elston.
Okay.
Rock, we're going to try and operate. Listen to Schechter. We need your help.
3, 2, 1. Ready.
Turn it on.
Roxon ignored the pain and concentrated on the vessels of his body, on the energy flows of his system being opened and everything being whole, functioning in harmony with itself. He felt the blood flowing unevenly through his heart, his diaphragm unable to fully constrict. He could practically hear his body screaming for oxygen.
Where? There! The clutch there! Pulse 40, BP 90 over 65 and dropping. Elston, hurry up! We're losing him!
Roxon ignored it all and entered a space of clear light within himself, the source of his life force. He joined with it, a spinning perfect diamond, no larger than a match head. He matched speeds within it, so he was the basic force of his life's engine. He found the burning rays of the ruby laser and guided them to the clots in his ventricles.
Still dropping. No, wait. It's rising now. The pulse is rising. He's helping us. I know he's helping us.
Roxon found the main clot with his mind. He felt the medicine being driven against it to no avail. But he was in his heart now, loosening it, helping it push the hard clots through. He visualized the heart, every part of it. Told the muscles to unconstrict, and gradually the muscles eased, the clot jostled, and finally crumbled into nothingness.
Pressure rising back to normal, blood purity improving. He's done it.
Turn off the laser.
Laser running down. Pulse is strong.
Well, it looks like we've done it. You all can take it from here. I'm exhausted. Let me know if his condition changes. So, it moves.
Roxon slowly opened his eyes. Dr. Schechter and head surgeon Elston, a quite attractive woman in her early 40s, were looking down upon him, clipboards in their hands.
Schechter,
easy there. You've got to really slow down this time, Rock. The poison is still in you, a lot of it anyway. We've given you huge doses of our new drug Neurospan, and it seems to be doing the trick. That spider toxin is almost beyond belief. It's one of the most potent neurologic corpuscle destroyers we've ever seen. Fascinating, quite fascinating. Really, you did medicine a big favor by allowing yourself to get bitten.
How long?
Oh, you've been out for about 10 hours, my boy, moaning and tossing.
10 hours? I want out. I hate hospitals.
Relax, Rock. You're not going anywhere for at least a few days. Now tell me, what was it like? I mean, being so close to near death.
It wasn't so bad. We think of ourselves as isolated fragments, just parts of the whole, almost all our lives. But I experienced the completeness of life and death. How they touch and mingle and subtly shift into one another. If only our lives could be as harmonious as death appeared to me. It was like looking into the eyes of God. Am I making any sense?
More than you know, Rock. There have been times late at night when I sense other directions we could have gone. Other means of existence. Sometimes I think we could... Ah. Dr. Elston.
Yes?
Let me know when he wakes up. He apparently needs to sleep more than I thought. Or I'm more boring than I thought.
Thirty-six hours later, headache gone, Roxanne was able to sit up and sip some vegetable broth. And he nearly gagged. Still, after a few minutes, he could sip it down, and it felt good and soothing to his throat and ravaged stomach. Dr. Elston walked in just as he was finishing his first meal in days.
Ah, I see the conquering hero is up and around. Your vitals seem to be doing much better. Once your digestive system gets going and you have a few good meals, you should be up and about. Your recuperative powers are absolutely amazing. By all medical textbooks, you should be dead as a doornail.
How many dead doornails you seen, Doc?
For the possible benefit of others who are ill or poisoned, Rock, we try to get a description of the things they went through. Saw. Felt. Do you feel up to talking about it?
Doc, I'm so bored, I'll talk your ear off if you let me.
Great. Just let me get this tape recorder going. Now, for the benefit of the listener, I'd like you to tell me what you went through. Specifically, Rock, we try to get a description of the mental forces that helped with your healing. I know you were conscious throughout much of the laser process. What were your thoughts? How were you able to help us so much?
When I was lying there near death, I could feel the poison in me. It was another enemy, another thing trying to kill me. And this I couldn't allow. So I guess, Doc, the first thing I'd say about what I did was vow not to die. But in this case, the battle was different than my usual physical confrontations. It was much... sounds crazy... gentler. I knew that if I tensed up, that the poison would win. I knew I had to relax, and to relax I had to make my whole body become one. Had to get all the different parts of myself working together as a team rather than... as a bunch of separate organ systems. I managed to find the unconscious. Made contact with my reflexive body system. It was like meditating, but so much more. That machine, incidentally, Doc, is great. I felt the rays, the heat working inside of me.
Yes, the laser beams cross holographically inside your body. And actually heat and excite the light-sensitive decoagulants so they become more effective. Schechter came up with it after hearing your report about the technician's healing machine. It's given Schechter and our medical people a lot to work with.
She questioned Rock for nearly an hour until she noticed he was getting tired again. She politely excused herself, wishing she could spend more time with the man. He was fascinating. So different from the run-of-the-mill males who constantly approached her with their lines, their macho smiles. Ted Roxon didn't need all that stuff. He was the real thing. President Zhabnov, supreme ruler of the United Socialist States of America, stared out at the new blast-deflecting concrete walls around the White House. They were being hastily constructed and strung with razor wire and directly bisected the Rose Garden.
Ruined. Washington, that you have to put up with this sort of distasteful occurrence?
The oil painting of America's first president didn't respond.
No, I'm sure you didn't. Sure you didn't. But I must make sacrifices in the name of security. I must armor myself. Make myself as impervious as possible to my enemies. My enemy. This is all Kilov's doing.
He shivered and his gut wrenched, as it always did when he thought of the commander of the KGB in America. The one man of whom he was truly terrified. Even in the presence of the skull-like face, although he himself was theoretically Kilov's superior, he felt like a powerless fool. The man's strength, his evil ambitions, made him burn like the fires of hell itself. And those eyes, set back in that pale, gaunt face, he couldn't bear to look in them.
He destroyed Pavlov City. I know it! We would have had thousands of American slave soldiers, President Washington! But he had to enter, citing some silly ancient law. And what next, Mr. President? Boom! Nuclear fire! His report spoke of American insurgents firing a nuclear shell at the city. But I know better. Kilov is safe in his Denver KGB monolith, and millions upon millions of my rubles are gone. That tells me all I need to know. Kilov wants power, Washington. He thinks that he, not I, should be the next premier. He tried to have Vasily poisoned, but Grandfather was too smart. Kilov has nobody left in Moscow. Nobody left alive. Now, it's up to me. I must protect myself and my legitimate power, as authorized by the Politburo, from those power mad maniacs in the KGB. I must launch small attacks against Kilov until the Grandfather is strong enough to send more supplies and troops.
Zhabnov walked to the nearly 10-foot-high mirror that sat between the portraits of Lincoln and Washington. He looked at himself. Not bad for a man nearing 55. He was very broad and meaty, with a typical Russian physique, big-boned, strong, and quite heavy. His face had a squarish bulldog kind of look, with thick black eyebrows and puffy, hedonistic lips. Not bad at all, he thought. He lifted his shoulders, pulled in his stomach, and pretended to stare Kilov down. Around him, the American presidents of past days fixed their oil eyes on him with cold accusation. Zhabnov took out a folder marked Top Secret from his desk and looked through it for the 20th time that day. Colonel Kilov thought he had the monopoly on terror and murder, but Zhabnov was about to join that club too. For 3 months, 17 specially selected men from Red Army elite forces had been training in Langley, Virginia, at the old CIA headquarters. Of the 17, the four best, brightest, and toughest of the lot had been selected. They all had a deep hatred for the KGB, stemming from events in their own pasts. Early KGB purges that had claimed family members or loved ones. They were more than ready and willing to give their lives to take out the ruthless blackshirt commander. The 13 that weren't picked were unceremoniously shot and buried. Nobody could talk.
Come in.
Goodenough, his male secretary, walked in.
They're here, Mr. President.
Excellent. Send them in.
Four large men walked into the executive office, led by General Zhilinsky, head of espionage, a short, totally bald man in an impeccable gray uniform carrying a leather attaché case. The four men walked up in front of the long desk and stood at attention. Zhabnov looked over them appraisingly. They were big, so big that they looked almost American, with blonde, rugged features. They remained absolutely silent, staring straight ahead.
Dragnov, Stepsky, Keronin, and Andreyev, Mr. President.
These are our best. Very well. What is their training? Can they do the job? Sit, all of you.
The men will stand, thank you, Mr. President. They are not used to relaxing. But I will sit, thank you. These are their dossiers. and think you'll find their training has been more than adequate. These men are perhaps some of the most highly trained killers in history. Each has learned numerous techniques of assassination, and each has become an expert in one particular weapon of his choice.
Very impressive. These men have killed quite a number of men.
Yes, Mr. President. All part of their training. They have each been sent out to kill selected targets throughout the period of training to ensure the ruthlessness and efficiency that will be required to kill... the target. Let me show you their specialties. Dragunov.
He pulled out a long, glistening ice pick, nearly 24 inches in length. He moved his hand around in a blur of motion, stabbing at the air over and over again. Then, just as quickly, he returned the sliver of death to his inner pocket. Zhabnov was impressed. He hadn't even been able to see the man's hand move. Surely no one could evade a blade with such speed. The next in line, Stepsky, walked a few inches forward and reached into his identical green-gray camouflage jacket. He came out with what looked like a blob of dark jelly and held it up for the president to see.
Plastique, Mr. President. Stepsky carries it throughout the lining of his clothing. It's undetectable by metal scanning devices, which we know the target has placed at all the entrances to the monolith. In fact, it's so woven into the fabric, so stretched out, that even the frisking won't reveal its presence.
Ooh, I like that one.
The next in line, Karonin, walked several inches ahead and, as the others had done, whipped out his method of destruction. A long, thin flask containing an amber-colored gas.
Poison, Mr. President. All he has to do is get within 50 feet of the target and release this gas and... one of the most deadly gases we've produced. Very painful and causes death within 60 seconds. We've been able to place Karonin as a clerk on the target's own floor. He begins next week. Should be very... interesting.
The man stepped back, and Andreyev, the largest of the lot, moved forward.
And what is his little toy?
He needs no toys, Mr. President. May I have a piece of furniture you aren't particularly fond of?
That over there in the corner, that thick dog coffee table. I hate it.
The general rose and walked briskly over to the object d'art and dragged it back until it was in the middle of the room.
Andreyev, please.
Incredible! He can do that with just the blade of his hand?
Imagine what he could do to our target's skull.
Very good, General. Very good indeed. I am quite pleased with the work you've performed here. Now, just one of you has to succeed. And I promise you this. Whichever man kills Colonel Kirillov will never have to worry about a thing for the rest of his life. He will have all that he wishes. That is my promise.
He looked into their eyes to catch a response to his offer, but could see only a vacuum within them, cold and dark as the reaches of space itself. A shiver ran down his spine. He was glad they were working for and not against him.
Excellent work, General. You are all dismissed.
Yes, Mr. President. I will keep you informed of all proceedings.
Please do. Soon, Chelinsky, we shall be moving to much better surroundings.